Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
When it comes to programming the show, we're not really doing the news here. We talk about some news, but this is not a news show. This is just sort of us getting together and talking and kind of having a conversation. So that means that while there are some things that are probably important, sometimes it's okay to just do things for some fun. And eventually on our show, a couple of minutes from now, we'll sort of get into what is probably the most important stuff from the football week. And there was some recruiting news. We'll get to that before we're done. There was obviously a lot to react to with the NFL Scouting Combine. Specifically, we'll do that here coming up in just a few minutes. But because it's a Monday, it's nice weather, and everybody's kind of starting to kind of encroach a little bit more on that spring time of year, maybe in a good mood because of that, can we do a couple of things just for fun here for a moment? You know, it's almost easy to forget that Georgia has a rival that's supposed to be its number one competitor, its number one, like, nemesis perhaps, but they are so inept as of recent years that they almost don't even belong, you know, on the same field with Georgia, in the same sentence with Georgia. They don't exist on the same plane. But it is true that Georgia still should view its number one rival as those lousy, stinking Gators of Florida. And the phrase that we've said now for a long time, I think, still remains just as true as ever, that a good Georgia fan hates Florida first and foremost. A lot of teams you could hate. We had a chance to kind of enjoy Georgia in a rivalry series in baseball this week against Georgia Tech. But the team you ought to probably hate the most is those lousy, stinking Gators of Florida. That's what Eddie or the Blind Squirrel, our mascot for Dog Nation Daily, is all about. That's pretty much kind of one of the big talking points for us when we close the show each and every day with our Gator Hater Updater. But listen, Florida has been so bad so long, we have an entire generation of new viewers, new listeners to our program. We probably don't have that same energy about Florida that we once did when we first started doing all that kind of stuff. So now it's more about not hating Florida because of what they have the potential to do to you, but now it's more about laughing at Florida because of how incapable that they are of seemingly doing anything to thwart the success that Georgia has enjoyed. Now, we're petty people, so we can also enjoy that part of this rivalry too. We can occasionally laugh. And I got to tell you, Florida, as of late, has given us plenty of reason to do just that. I'm going to start with this. You know, Tate Ratledge, Brett Thorson, the two Georgia players now who are doing, I think they'll call it the Real Talk podcast. It's the podcast the Georgia players do with each other. They interview other Georgia players. Tate's been sort of a fixture in this show for quite some time. There's been sort of a rotating cast of guys, I guess, who've joined him before moving on to the NFL or whatever else. Brett Thorson is now Tate Ratledge's co-host. The other day, they had Trevor Etienne on the program, the brand new Georgia running back who comes here by way of the Florida Gators. Steve Spurrier the other day, when he was quoted by the Florida Times Union, was kind of lamenting about this fact, saying, oh my gosh, can you imagine a Florida running back going to Georgia? How painful that would have been, even in a relatively recent era of college football there for Florida. But that is the reality the Gators sort of find themselves in right now, knowing that one of their guys, who at one point in time represented a pretty big recruiting win for the program, is now coming to Georgia. And to make matters worse and perhaps put salt in the wound of your guy leaving your place to go to your hated rival up there in Georgia, Trevor Etienne's stated reason for why he wanted to do that, I think, is even worse for Florida. And if you're a Georgia fan, like I said before, just for fun, just to laugh at here a little bit, Trevor Etienne making it very clear to Brett Thorson and Tate Ratledge the other day on the Real Talk podcast about exactly why it is that he wants to come to Georgia and wants to leave Florida. Every dog fan will like this. Here's Etienne.
So, you know, pretty much to sum it up, it was like, I could either be running back two on a losing team or go somewhere where, like, I wanted to play in December too. That also played a big part in me transferring. So that I could stay, be running back two on a losing team, or go somewhere and, you know, possibly be running back one and win a natty.
So in other words, I could be in Florida and be on a losing team, or I could come to Georgia, have a chance to have great success running behind a better offensive line, being a part of just a better offense overall, and perhaps win a national championship. Now, there is a lot about that that's enjoyable. There's really nothing about that that's unenjoyable. But let me tell you what my very favorite part of that is. It's the fact that he sort of says this just like sort of matter-of-factly. It almost sounds like he's ordering at a fast food joint or just somewhere else. He's just sort of talking matter-of-factly of, listen, I could stay at Florida and be a part of a losing team, or I could come here and maybe have a chance to win the national championship. He's not raising his voice. He's not cutting a wrestling promo. He's not sort of doing this for the guffaws, the LOLs. He's just, from his perspective, just sort of telling the truth that this is sort of the way all of this goes down. And that's one of the things I think that sort of makes this a little bit funnier. Now, I'll also add this to the overall discussion, too. I think those of us who kind of put ourselves in the sort of traditionalist camp when it comes to college football can find a lot of fault with a lot of the current things and sort of what feels like a new era for college football, and perhaps some of that's justifiably so. But I would say this is an example of some ways in which college football is changing, and changing maybe for the better. You know, in the old school world of college athletics, all of the players on a team were sort of kept behind lock and key. They don't ever speak to the media. We don't ever hear their voices. We don't ever see their faces. They're sort of trotted out very, very carefully, very, very judiciously. And everybody's really careful not to say the wrong thing or allow the players to be on a platform where they could say the wrong thing. That's sort of the old era of college football. But in the NIL age in which we live now, where the individual marketability matters, it has true recognizable value, all of a sudden we get a chance to have a little bit more access to players than we once did. There are autograph signings with players now that you can participate in a way that would not have existed even a few years ago. And there are interviews like this with Etienne where he says something sort of halfway volatile, halfway interesting. There's a little bit of energy behind the words that Etienne uses. It's the kind of thing in the past programs would have bent over backwards to try to prevent from happening. But in this particular case, Etienne says it. We have a little bit of a laugh about it. And everybody sort of moves on. There's no harm, no foul. There's no, you know, huge, you know, issue with any of this. Florida doesn't like it. We like it. They don't like it. But in terms of this being the kind of bulletin board material or the kind of salacious quote that gets somebody in trouble, obviously that's not the case. It's literally a relatively harmless amount to fund. So if you're a traditionalist and you're a little bit concerned with all the change around college football, this is perhaps an example of some of that change being for the better. I like the fact that kids can get players' autographs now in a way they couldn't. I like the fact that my son, you know, he likes these football cards that have the Georgia players on them, and you can get a chance to go chase after those and hear from these guys in podcast interviews in, like, you know, late February, early March, in a way you would not have in the past. That's sort of an example of that. Of course, we always like making fun of Florida, and Trevor Etienne right there gives us a chance to do that and makes that pretty easy. But he's not the only example today of Florida as just sort of being down bad here at the moment. It's not just Etienne talking about the lousy nature of the team being one of the reasons he wanted to leave. The all-time great, the true Florida legend, the name that I mentioned a moment ago, Steve Spurrier, is also out there saying some things right now there as well. Spurrier, I talked about him, you know, mentioning how incredulous it would be to think that a Florida running back could leave to go to Georgia. Spurrier was, you know, also the other day kind of quoted in a Florida Times Union piece. The guy that writes this, longtime columnist, his name is Gene Frenette. And they're talking about just the overall nature of the situation at Florida here right now. How much do you love hearing Steve Spurrier kind of go pretty tarred here on Billy Napier just for a moment? This is from the Florida Times Union. Spurrier saying, there's a feeling around the Gators of, what the heck are we doing? Have you watched the Florida game as of late? Have you observed the Florida program as of late? Steve Spurrier, it may be wrong about a lot, but he's not wrong about this. There are lots of reasons as of late when it comes to Florida to say, what the heck are they doing? Spurrier goes on to say in the Florida Times Union, there's a lot of questions that I don't have answers to about this organization. He says, just because you hire the most people, and do you remember the team picture the other day? Or this is, I guess, what, 2 years ago when it's like you got, you know, 100 players, and it seems like another 100-something people wearing golf shirts sort of wrapped around the players for the team picture, a true army of analysts. That's what Spurrier's talking about here. He says, when you hire the most people, that doesn't mean you're going to win. All these extra people, Spurrier says, I question how much that really helps. Now, Spurrier goes on to say, this is a tough situation for Billy Napier. He says, Billy Napier's a good guy who works his tail off. I like Billy. He's a good family man. Boy, you talk about damning him with faint praise. And listen, it's important to be a family man. It's important to be a good guy who works your tail off. But doesn't all this sort of set up for the real zinger that Spurrier really wants to give here? He's a good guy. He works his tail off. I like him. He's a good family man. But I do wish the organization was a bit more tidy. Steve Spurrier says the Florida program right now is not tidy. tidy enough, which is a very interesting word to use, and probably an example of how bad things are for those lousy, stinking Gators here right now. So the overall bottom line here is that in the grand scheme of things, none of this is necessarily new. Georgia fans know that Florida's a mess. Georgia fans know on the shortest of short lists of coaches who could lose their job during the upcoming season, there's perhaps no more prime candidate for that than Billy Napier. Florida plays an incredibly tough schedule, and Napier has proven thus far completely incapable of doing anything to change the fortunes of the program that he inherited from the previous failed coach, Dan Mullen, who inherited the program from the previous failed head coach, Jim McElwain. That just sort of is what it is. This isn't new, but just because it's new doesn't mean it isn't fun. Trevor Etienne laughing at Florida, saying, I want to be here and win a national championship. I want to be here and have great success. Why would I want to stay at Florida when I can be a part of this? Steve Spurrier, the most respected voice of the program of all, saying, this program's just not very tidy right now. This program's kind of a mess right now, in other words. I got to tell you, if you're a Georgia fan who's got your own share of success to enjoy and things have been very good for Georgia for quite some time, the fact that so many of your rivals have it so bad, I think makes the overall success that Georgia's enjoying that much sweeter. So at a time in which there's a lot going on in the football world, there's always at least a little bit of time to pause and laugh and make fun of those lousy, stinking Gators. And when that needs to be done, I can promise you, we'll be here to do it. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are glad to have you with us here today, no matter how you get to us. And we certainly appreciate our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. And, of course, you can find us across all video platforms, 10 a.m. We start live. Of course, many of you watch it after the fact, on demand. We're glad you do that. Maybe you check us out on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast. Wherever you find them, we're just really, really glad you're here and really, really glad you're a part of it. And as I said before, boy, so grateful to have a great sponsor like Pella Window and Door of Georgia who makes it all happen here today. This is one of those weekends where love being outside, had a chance to, you know, watch my son play baseball, which I always love doing, and have a chance to, you know, my daughter was out yesterday and she's playing in the yard and the cul-de-sac and everything else. And you look out the window, you see that going on, and you're reminded of, you know, what just a great thing it is to be at home this time of year. And perhaps when you're sitting at home and looking out, you want to look out through windows that you know are the best constructed product available for you or the most energy efficient product for you. Because pretty soon, this warm weather is a reminder those AC is going to be cranking up. My gosh, air conditioning, just like anything else, probably more expensive than it's ever been before. So therefore, whatever you can do to save yourself money on your energy bills, one of those decisions that probably you owe it to yourself to kind of make that decision. That's where the Pella windows, the Pella doors come in. They could potentially save you a good bit of money there on your energy bills, which would be a really wise thing to do. It's also, as I say, just one of the best ways to take care of one of the things that's perhaps more important to you than anything. That is your own home. So I would invite you to stop by and see my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia at their Experience Center right there in Duluth. You can kind of look at the entire product line. And for me, I'm a little bit of a touch person. I like to touch the product. I like to feel what makes it different and also interact with those Pella experts. Now, if you can't get over to Duluth to do that, they can come to your home to do that for you. They can do that virtually with you if you'd prefer to do that. It's a no-pressure consultation. It's just sort of an informative discussion about why Pella windows and doors are better for you. Wise builders have been using these, but when you kind of want to upgrade your own home in the same way, the Pella product is absolutely the place that you want to go. You also want to take advantage of the great savings on all this right now as well, because Pella certainly got a great offer out there for you right now. When it comes to the end of the month, March 31st, you can get 20% off your project or no money down, no interest, no payments for 12 months. That's awesome. So I want you to reach out, and I want you to tell them that BA from Dog Nation Daily said they'd take good care of you, because I know they will. Give them a call, 678-638-1429. One more time. That's 678-638-1429. You can also find them online, PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. That's PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. So we said to start our program, we just sort of did something just for fun, maybe not the most important thing that's out there right now, but a little bit of fun, and it's kind of good to do that here. As far as what really mattered from the weekend that was, let's talk about that as we go around the doghouse, and a lot of this is going to lead into the conversation I want to have with John Stinchcomb here coming up. NFL Scouting Combine was the big event. I would say we'll be probably talking some Combine for the next few days, but to me, the thing that probably mattered most from the NFL Combine, or the thing that I probably thought probably spoke the most of what sort of matters at Georgia right now was the reaction that Amarius Mims got, the offensive tackle who's hoping to be a first-round pick. A lot of Georgia Bulldogs probably helped themselves. Ladd McConkey maybe most prominent of the other names, but Tyke Smith, Javon Bullard, a lot of those guys really, I think, kind of improved their draft stock perhaps with the way they performed. But the reaction to Amarius Mims I find to be really telling. And I think this is going to start a larger conversation with us that may go on for some time in the future. And I think the broadcast kind of called him, what, an Avenger because of his overall size, his wingspan, the way that he ran. Dane Brugler, who's a long time, he works for The Athletic now, but he's been covering the NFL draft for a long time, says when you look at a 5.07 40-yard dash for a 340-pound Amarius Mims, that's just freaky. Brugler goes on to say that he's the most fascinating offensive line prospect in this class. I think the one thing that you kept seeing over and over was the reaction to his size, the wingspan, the weight, the height, but also the athleticism to move at that size just sort of speaks to the fact that Amarius Mims is just a little bit different kind of prospect. We talked the other day about Kirby Smart when he was on with Josh Pate saying that when NFL scouts come to him, they say, we can't find offensive line. We can't find enough of these guys. And Kirby Smart says, hey, when it comes to these offensive and defensive linemen, that's what we cultivate. That's what we bring to the program. That's what we develop. That's what we try to put on display. In so many ways, that's what we want our program identity to be. Kirby Smart made that very clear. We talked about that the other day. And when you see the reaction to Mims, I think you're reminded of just how important all of that is, because what it speaks to is, look, we saw a wide receiver run the fastest 40-yard time there's ever been run in the NFL scouting combine. That was a big deal, and everybody reacted to it. But the truth is, that ends up only being one of the really good wide receiver performance in NFL scouting combine. There are a lot of elite offensive wide receivers, it seems like, here right now. But the point is, there are kind of a lot of them. And eventually, some of that sort of runs together. And you may take Marvin Harrison Jr. in the top five, but if you draft 15th overall, you're still going to have some wide receivers. Back into the first round, you're still going to have some wide receivers. Elite wide receivers are incredibly valuable, but there are seemingly kind of a lot of them right now. But when you see the way in which the people on TV or the sports writers who are there covering it, when you see the way in which they just lose their mind talking about Amarius Mims, you're left to conclude that position is where the real scarcity lies. That there is a certain rarity to being the sort of athlete that Mims is at that size. And that scarcity means value. And for Georgia to pursue the most, I guess, valuable uses of its time or the most valuable uses of its NIL resources, it's to find a way to make sure you've got as many guys, not like Amarius Mims, because not everybody's like that, but at least similar to Amarius Mims. Finding guys like that is just going to be a crucial thing for Georgia. We talked, I think it was Friday, you know, sort of a fancier word than I should use, allocation. At some point in time, you've raised all the NIL dollars you can raise. How do you choose to allocate the money after that? I'd say trying to find as many Amarius Mims and keeping guys like Mims in the program and keeping them happy while they're here. Boy, that may be as important a thing that Georgia can do moving forward as possible. Now, the good thing is, when it comes to Mims, I know at one point in time he sort of teetered on the brink of perhaps transferring, chose not to, and it sounds like he's thrilled with the decision that he made. He told, including our Dog Nation team, but all the gathered reporters here this week, that he loved his time at Georgia, and when he thinks about what makes him the kind of NFL draft prospect he currently is, he really credits that time at UGA for helping get him to this point. Strong stuff from Mims going back to Indianapolis last week.
Honestly, like I said, I feel like Georgia's the best college institution in the country. And I feel like they prepared me and the guys, my teammates here, more than anybody else in the country, honestly. Man, it's just the hard coaching, you know. The coaching staff we got is the best coaching staff in the country. And that's like, I strongly feel that's true. And like I said, they teach you how to grow up, like, before your time, honestly. And I had to do that real quick. And like I said, I'm very thankful for that.
I mean, this is sort of a simple point, a small point, but I would say when you watch the combine, the reaction to the athletes that are there, I just think you're reminded once again, as a Georgia fan or as the Georgia program, this is what you want your brand to be. You want tough, athletic, big men. You want the best big athletes you can find. Mims there clearly embraces the hard coaching he got at Georgia, so there's some tough-mindedness to all of this. But the athletic big man, that's the thing that you want your program identity to be. It's a scarce commodity. There aren't a lot of them. That's why when you see the athletic big man, the TV reaction is what it is. The sports writer reaction is what it is, because it just stands out from the rest of the crowd. And as a Georgia program, you want to continue to stand out from the crowd. That's what Amarius Mims gives you a chance to do. And obviously the way to make sure you always have enough is in a roundabout way to try to make sure you've actually got more than you need or more than you can use. That if the pipeline of guys who are coming in is big enough, then what you're able to play and what you're able to utilize, you'll always have what you need. At a time in which a lot of programs don't have enough offensive linemen, you kind of want to be the program that sort of has more than it needs, which is perhaps the case for UGA, because we did learn over the course of the last 24 hours that Chad Lindbergh, who I still think is a pretty good offensive line prospect, and I think the places he gets a chance to transfer to could prove just how true this is. But Lindbergh did announce he's leaving the Georgia program. I'll show this on the screen to you here for a moment, saying on Twitter, or now we call it X, that he's entering the transfer portal as a graduate. He's going to have 2 years of eligibility. He's pursuing an MBA. Emily Lindbergh pops in to say he's got a master's in business analytics, also 2 national championships. He's a dog for life. He said, not an easy decision, but we have loved our time in Athens. So the Lindbergh family clearly enjoying their time at UGA, but also now looking ahead to find some playing time somewhere else, which is the business decision that perhaps we can all understand why a guy like Chad Lindbergh is making it. But once again, it sort of speaks to the larger point that you want to have the best big men you can find, and you want to hoard more than your fair share, which means some of those guys may have to leave, transfer out, go find their opportunity for playing somewhere else, but you get to kind of watch the competition play out, sort the best from the best, and put those guys as your best 5 on the field for your offensive line or your best group for your defensive line. That really has been the secret to Georgia's success. When you see the reaction to Amarius Mims, the NFL scouting combine, you're reminded of really just how true that is. And if you could have anything said about you moving forward, as Kirby Smart foreshadowed in his interview the other day, you want to be the program known for finding the best players along the lines of scrimmage. Because if that's the area you're dominating, you're probably, as Chad Lindbergh pointed out, winning your own share of national championships while you're here there as well. And that is Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia here today. Now, speaking of elite recruits on the lines of scrimmage, it just so happens that a couple of those guys have updated their recruitment. We'll tell you more about that before we're done on the show today. And we started the show by laughing at one UGA rival. We will laugh at a different UGA rival before we're done today there as well. So a lot of fun here on a Monday. But for now, on everything else with Chad Lindbergh transferring, the rest of the NFL scouting combine, and everything going on with Georgia, let's have a conversation with our buddy John Stinchcomb, the former UGL American, here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me bring in John Stinchcomb. Always happy to have his time. The beard is gone. Oh, my gosh. This is breaking news. The Roman centurion beard that John was growing for his Easter play is no more. So if you're not watching radio or watching a video, don't see this. So, John, I'll spend just a couple seconds on this. Did it just get too itchy, too scratchy, to quote the Simpsons characters? Is that what went down here?
Confession here, BA. There's 2 reasons. One, I just couldn't take it.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I had lice in my beard. I really didn't. It's kind of gross. But no, it's just itchy. And two, as I was told by many people, the Roman guard usually were clean shaven because of lice. So
is that right?
To be more time specific, I think it's appropriate that I shaved.
Fair enough. So 2020, back when the world stopped, just for because of anything else better to do, I did try to grow a beard. It's the only time in my life I've ever had facial hair. The one thing I couldn't get over was I had to learn how to drink. Like you drink a cup of water or something like that. It all just sort of pour down your face because it hits the mustache and sort of rolls down. I couldn't figure out how to do that. That was the weirdest thing to me about having facial hair. I just felt like I was just getting stuff all over my face all over the time. But that's not the point. It is good to see a clean-shaven John Stinchcomb nonetheless. As he says, period specific when it comes to the Roman centurion for the Easter play he has coming up here, which we like. We're talking a lot about offensive line before you join us. I want to kind of get back into that here for a moment. And I'll get to the NFL combine stuff, the things we were saying about Amarius Mims. But how about Chad Lindbergh prior to that? You know, I think I'm a big believer that One of the things that demonstrates what Georgia is as a program is that for the most part, when Georgia is a transfer player, and it's not immune to that, it has, you know, transfer players just like every other major program does. When it does have these transfers, these are guys who are transferring somewhere in the Power Five and they're kind of continuing their football career at a pretty high level. My assumption is that's the same thing that's going to happen for Lindbergh here too. My guess is he's going to have a lot of potential suitors there in the transfer portal. I'm guessing he's probably playing, you know, at the, it's not really Power Five anymore because of the conference realignment, but the opportunity to play for what we think of as sort of a power program. My guess is that's what Lindbergh gets a chance to do. So just briefly here before we start talking about Amarius Mims and the rest of the stuff that's going on, your kind of knee-jerk reaction to Lindbergh entering the portal.
Yeah, I don't think it's unexpected. You look at the numbers that Georgia has, and right now offensive line depth is probably one of the positions of abundance where there probably needs to be some attrition in that space. There's only so much opportunity in practice. And with the number of young guys we've got coming in, I think Georgia needs that space, those reps, and the scholarship. Now, I appreciate guys like Chad Lindbergh. I appreciate the time that he served. He's honored his commitment to come to the University of Georgia. And now, after years, is kind of looking for his opportunity to see some playing time. And in this day and age of transfers being a reality and a part of the program, it makes sense. It makes sense for both the program, University of Georgia-wise, and for Chad to look for opportunities where he can get better opportunities to find the field.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this just sort of speaks to kind of a cold reality when it comes to college football, that the only way to have enough of a valuable position in offensive line, you and I both would say is an incredibly valuable position, the only way to have enough is to bring in more than you need. And honestly, individual player evaluations are not automatics. You know, it's like if we said, you and I were, let's say we were the coaches, we're in charge of the Georgia program. Okay, we're going to bring in the five offensive linemen that we know are the best, and that's just going to be our offensive line. We'd get it wrong half the time. And the people who do this for a living now, I mean, just to be honest with you, they get it wrong about half the time. The NFL draft, the people who draft in the first round, they get it wrong about half the time. It's like you really don't know who's going to rise to the top and who's going to perhaps not, who's going to really emerge in the competition. So the only thing you can do, bring in more than you need as a way of ensuring your chance of getting the five that can really help you the most. And so therefore, you know, you can talk about things about the current age of college football we don't like. This is one of the things that I do support. Chad Lindbergh, as you say, you come to Georgia, you compete, you give it your all. He certainly dominated in the classroom. And so now, you know, go and have your opportunity to kind of fulfill your mission as a football player the way that it didn't quite work out at Georgia. We would say more power to you as you go do that somewhere else. But this is just the nature of the beast. Players want to play. Lindbergh deserves to. Georgia needs to have a large number of bodies in a competition like this so that it can find the five that it really needs on the field. And that's just, I would say, the blunt reality of what college football is in 2024.
Yeah, it's where we are in college sports right now, specifically football. And for Georgia, they have this luxury where, you know, Chad came in as a highly rated high school player. And for all accounts, as far as I know, has worked hard and done all he could to make the team better and serve the University of Georgia to the best of his ability, and now sees that there's probably better opportunity for him elsewhere. I can respect that, especially understanding the landscape as it lies, not only in Athens, but across the country. So this is a reality that, like it or not, this is what college football looks like. And because of Georgia's ability to recruit, we'll continue to get highly rated, highly skilled players come, and they were recognizing an opportunity to develop. I heard you quote Amarius Mims a little bit earlier about the development and challenges that he's had. We've heard Broderick Jones say the same thing. One of his first interviews when he got to Pittsburgh was talking about the competition that he saw as an incoming freshman and how much better that makes you as a player. So Georgia has that luxury of saying, here is the path that a number of our players have taken, where they come in highly rated, which recruiting is a big piece. And then the second piece of this is you're developed as a player. You will get better, and we'll try to find or get you to as close to your ceiling as possible over the next you know, 3 to 5 years, depending on how long you have with a guy.
I want to move on to the NFL scouting combine. I want to talk about the whole event, but I did mention Amarius Mims before, and so I always like to get your thoughts anytime we're talking about an offensive lineman. What I kind of alluded to earlier is that value is determined by scarcity, and when you see the reaction to a guy like Mims, it's like, oh, my gosh, look at this guy. This is, you know, the sort of wow factor reaction that he draws. A, I would say Amarius Mims deserves that. But B, I would also say it's a reminder to Georgia of recognize where true scarcity lies and recognize the challenge of making sure that this program is defined by athletic big men, offensive and defensive linemen. But if that's your brand, if that's what you're known for, that style of football is not going out of fashion anytime soon, I don't believe. And I just think the reaction to Mims here this week is a reminder of where, you know, Georgia ought to be putting its eggs. The basket they ought to be putting them in is, you know, how do you make sure you have the best, most athletic big men? Because if you do, you're almost always going to stand out from the crowd of the rest of your competition.
Yeah, I think you can't have enough, you know, Andrew Thomas's, Jamari Salyers, Cedric Von Prons. I mean, talented, athletic big men. You know, with Amarius Mims, the numbers will blow you away. But I think you talk about scarcity. There's a number of concerns that surround a player like this. That, you know, for Georgia, we only saw a limited number of games where he was available, and you know, he pulls his hamstring at the combine. But yet, still, despite the fact that he's only got, you know, a small sample of on the field performance and, you know, a history, or less, you know, at least something that you need to be somewhat concerned about with injuries, he's still regarded as a potential first round draft pick and has the ceiling that a lot of players can't even come close to. You look at 6'7", 340 and runs a 5.40, then, you know, there's only so many people that have that kind of God-given blessing of size and also athleticism. And for all Georgia fans, what we saw when we did get to see it, you know, he's a special player. He could be one of the very best. And I think that's what NFL teams are looking at. You hear him talk and you recognize that he saw Georgia as an opportunity to, you know, compete against the best, get himself prepared for this next level. And I think that's what NFL teams are valuing is players, especially in the offensive and defensive line. There's not a ton of them that come to that next level that are either A, prepared, or B, have that ceiling to reach that elite level. And Georgia continues on both sides of the ball to produce a product that NFL teams covet.
Yeah, I think the other guy that kind of made a name for himself a little bit seemed to be Ladd McConkey, whose testing numbers seem to be really high and obviously kind of culminates with, I would say, one of the more entertaining and fascinating stories that's come through Georgia as of late. You know how overlooked he was as a recruit. By now, this is all well-traveled ground for those of us who, you know, live our lives within Georgia football. But, you know, what did you make of McConkey kind of fulfilling every kind of hope people have had for him to have a good combine? Now, there's also a lot of really good wide receivers, so Ladd's in some pretty thick competition here right now. But what did you make of what seemed to be like a really good performance for Ladd McConkey, culminating a pretty phenomenal story in terms of what he's made himself into as a football player?
Yeah, and I think that's what you look at guys like Ladd that came in with very little fanfare and then produced at an exceptional level. And now is showing the NFL that it's not just, hey, I'm a quote unquote good football player that understands the game. He's got some of those characteristics and skills that translates no matter what. I think we've all seen guys that were productive in high school that weren't able to make the jump, and also the same for college, productive college players that weren't able to transition their game to the next level. And a lot of the times it's just a lower ceiling. And for Ladd, I think you saw this past week what he showed at the combine. It's not just, hey, I'm a heady football player that can make plays at this level. I've got the skill set that can translate to the next. And, you know, for anybody that puts on the film, we saw how productive he is when he's on a football field. So I think that's what should be and continues to be the number one qualifier as these talent evaluators are looking for who can help my team at the next level. Everyone's looking for playmakers, and Ladd continued to show throughout his time in Athens that you know, he's got that skill set and now is putting the numbers behind it to let the rest of the country know and the NFL know that it's based on skills that he's developed. Again, it's the development, I think, that has really stood out to me. Georgia's been able to recruit a number of players for years and years, but to see how much they continue, you bring in great players and you move them to elite and really good players and move them to that great status. And that's what has been a distinguishing factor for Georgia along the way.
So the combine to me is a little bit like a three ring circus. There's like 1,000 things happening at once. Is there anything else that kind of stands out to you as like a key takeaway, whether it be Georgia, just more broadly about football overall? I mean, I'm not, to be frank, glued to my TV for all the NFL scouting combine. It's not always my cup of tea necessarily, but is there anything else sort of more broadly about the combine as someone who went through all this as a player yourself? You know, anything else on your mind about the event or kind of the pre-draft process, where things stand right now for a lot of these guys?
Well, again, like everything else, it's changing. I think a couple things stood out to me. Anytime a guy runs a 4.21 40, that's impressive and noteworthy.
Yeah.
And just shows the level of athleticism that continues to swirl around football at both levels, but also the regard in which players and now coaches are holding the combine. What used to be, you know, the quintessential bridge between college football to the draft has now, you know, we've seen more and more players, agents, and coaches kind of devalue this week as to its importance of a player's opportunity to be a top draft pick and for talent evaluators to get a full scope of and handle and profile for these players. So, you know, whether it's Caleb Williams, you know, kind of pushing over, hey, I'll give my medical results to the teams that, you know, are in contention, rather than, you know, the mentality of yesteryear, mm-hmm. where it was like, hey, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity, and I'm going to try to put everything I can in front of these 32 teams. So I think it just speaks to, you look at the number of decisions that are made. It used to be a single decision. If I'm given this opportunity, I'm going to take advantage of it. And I think there's a little more strategy at play on all aspects, whether it's coaches, teams, organizations, or now players and agents, as to what they're trying to look for and what they're trying to show.
You mentioned Xavien Worthy's 40 times, setting a record at the combine for the fastest ever. John, when I see that, the question that comes to my mind is, and this is an unanswerable question, but how much faster can humans get? I mean, we're conditioned to believe that, you know, every generation sort of sees, you know, new breakthroughs athletically. I would say athletes are obviously much bigger now than they would have been years ago. They're also just more athletic in general, faster specifically. But at a certain point in time, haven't we kind of hit the ceiling? I mean, maybe that's not the case, but my gosh, it just sort of seems like, you know, not only does Worthy run the record-setting time, but look at all like the sort of 4.3-ish, you know, stuff we see from other guys that just sort of gets filed away as a good 40 time, but not anything sort of, you know, record breaking. Like 25, 30, 40 years from now, how much faster are humans even capable of being than they are right now?
Well, that's a great question. I think we saw a big jump when training came involved. And this was, you know, when was that, 70s and 80s, where it was a real focus on weightlifting and running. And then it became position specific and nutrition. And in recent years, it's down to the finest details of, you know, there are coaches that are singularly focused on, you know, your 40 time or your broad jump or your three cone drill. That's been around a while, but I think we start seeing that at even earlier ages. So it's all these pieces that have seen kind of there were great athletes that preceded us, but they might not have had access to the level of training or the level of nutrition. And now it's so specific and so readily available at such a much younger age as you know, kids are going through puberty. You got middle schoolers and certainly high schoolers that are training in these facilities that used to be exclusive to those that are either trying to bridge the gap between college and NFL or just the latter, that now you see all of it kind of culminating throughout a player's career starting in middle school. So I do think that we're kind of close to that ultimate bridge. I don't see another opportunity to kind of squeeze those numbers down like we have in years past.
Along those lines, and this probably doesn't matter, I'm just more curious about it, but it seems like we've seen a good number of Georgia players the last few years run what might have been surprisingly good 40 times. Now, maybe surprising to me because I don't know enough, but like Tyke Smith was much faster than I expected him to be. A couple of years ago, George Pickens was much faster than I expected him to be. There are examples of that. And my assumption is, once again, you can probably look at me and tell, not exactly an expert in the 40-yard dash. You could probably guess that by looking at me. But the point is that when a guy runs a far more impressive 40-yard dash than perhaps was expected, I assume that's less about the player's just faster than he used to be and more about he's just now better at running a 40-yard dash. He's gotten the kind of training about how you come out of the block or certainly don't do some sort of zigzag run. You know, you run the straightest possible line. You know, it's more about technique than just absolute sort of burner speed ability. You know, how true would you say that probably is?
I would say it's very true. I think you've got guys like, Worthy. Noteworthy that it's a 4-2-1, but you're also in a category of like John Ross. Well, John Ross isn't known for his performance on the NFL field. It was his performance on a 40-yard dash. I think you can certainly train guys and have experienced this myself on how to perform well in these drills. They're drills. A lot of it should translate to the football field, but on one hand, you've got guys like John Ross that their numbers really never matched their performance on a football field. And then on the other side of things, more recently, a guy like Kyle Hamilton, who's playing safety, and his numbers didn't wow you as a speedy secondary player, which eliminated him from contention for some teams. But you see, boy, that guy's just a football player. Alec Ogletree is another one. I mean, he had a double-digit year career in the NFL, and his numbers didn't wow you, but that guy can play some really good football. So there's ways that I think players kind of mask their ability to translate that and carry it over to the football field. Some are just better at drills than they are actual football players. And then there are others that may not test well, but man, do I want them on my team come Sunday.
Let me squeeze in one more thing before we let you go, if you don't mind. Last week, I would say one of the bigger stories to come out is the additional proposed change is the college football playoff format. John, I find this to be fascinating. I would say the defining characteristic of college football fans are our willingness to argue with each other about things, that everything in college football is divisive because college football fans just like to argue. And I'm right there with it. It's just sort of what we do for fun. We argue about stuff related to college football. It is therefore then amazing anytime there is something that feels like close to unanimous agreement. And I've looked as many different places as I can. People don't like what they're hearing about these changes to a college football playoff format we haven't even seen take effect yet. We haven't actually even gotten to a 12-team playoff yet. Now we're being told 2 years after we do the 12-teamer, we're moving to the 14-teamer. And in addition to, I think we may have talked about this last week, the different number of berth allocated to the SEC, the Big Ten, the other leagues. You've also now got the idea, well, the conference champ, the Big Ten, and the SEC, they're going to be guaranteed sort of advancement in there, sort of extra special treatment for both the SEC and the Big Ten. People hate this, John, and I guess I'm just sort of curious as to what your reaction is to the insistence on the powers that be to move this event into a direction that at least right now almost no one thinks is a positive step forward for the sport.
Yeah, there's so much to iron out, let's call it. Let's be gracious and say iron out, not say flawed and troubled and broken within the system, that this seems like one of the smaller fish to fry. I'm more concerned about these legislative and what's coming out of the courtrooms of whether or not there's going to be college football as we know it in the future. 2 years down the road from 12-team college football playoff, who knows if that's even the same model that we're using. There's so much to change that will come, I think, mostly from these court cases. And I think that will dictate more who's eligible to play, what it looks like, what's the school affiliation. I think all of that is on the table. So, nobody really likes this proposed plan, mainly because so much is changing so fast, and lost in this is we still use the misnomer student athlete as if the school is tied to their tenure in a location, with transfers, you know, almost negating the fact that, you know, school at one time was a priority, and now it seems to be much lower on the priority list. You start going to these 14 teams and tagging on more games on the back end, and looking at, well, how does that really affect their ability to be a student during the process? Total afterthought, right? So much to iron out. I'm not a big fan or proponent of what they've floated out there, yeah, along with everyone else, but not even close to the biggest fish to be fried in these next few years.
John, I think that's well said, and I think that's a good perspective. We certainly appreciate that from you, whether you have a beard or you're clean shaven. However you choose to show up, we're just glad that you're here on our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window in Door of Georgia. Hope you have a great week, and we'll look forward to having you back here on our show again very soon as well.
Thanks for having me on, BA. Go Dogs.
Great stuff. Go Dogs to you, too.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Somebody criticized me one time because John always signs off by saying Go Dogs. That's sort of his signature. And they said, well, when he says Go Dogs, you never say Go Dogs back. So Go Dogs right back to John Stinchcomb there on all of that. I've got a little bit more I want to say in response to kind of what John was saying there, but let me kind of fold that into cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I got to tell you, man, we're there. I mean, it is showtime, go time. The Dog Nation cruise is on tap. In fact, at this point in time, you know, you may be living vicariously through all of us who get a chance to be on board. But I'm so excited about Allure of the Seas. You know, this is a Royal Caribbean cruise ship. I haven't personally gotten a chance to be on board yet. So when I sail on Allure with all of you coming up in April, that'll be my first time to be on this Oasis class ship. Now, I have been on two other Oasis class ships. I've been on Harmony of the Seas. I've been on Wonder of the Seas, but I have not been on Allure of the Seas. So coming up in just a few weeks, I'm going to get a chance to do that for the very first time. And, you know, for a lot of our folks who, you know, we always have a good number of people taking their first cruise when we go on a Dog Nation cruise, or for perhaps those who've maybe only been on Dog Nation cruises, therefore they've never been on an Oasis class ship. I can't wait to introduce this category of ship, this category of vessel, if you will, to our people, because I just think they're going to be blown away. And any of you that get a chance to be on an Oasis class ship, I just think you're going to be blown away by all of the options for entertainment and dining and bars and lounges and just sort of fun stuff that you get a chance to do on a ship like this. It's just an incredible experience. We are seeing kind of the overhead shot, if you're watching on video, of the Central Park neighborhood. I love that. When you walk through that, not only is it like live foliage and you kind of feel like you're in a sort of a big city park, but there's like, you know, bars and special restaurants and things like that that you can go to right there in that park. It's so cool. On the back of the ship there, you see a little bit of the Aqua Theater, an amazing high dive show being done on the back of that ship on the Aqua Theater, where it's like, you know, how are you diving into a pool like this from, I don't know, it looks like 40, 50 feet in the air, something like that, you know, jumping in the water. How are you able to do that? Amazing athletes that perform in shows like this, but it's also sort of an amazing example of the entertainment options that are available for you on a ship like Allure of the Sea. So if you can't be with us on the Dog Nation cruise, I hope you'll contact Jessica Slater. You can call her 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can email her at jslater@dreamvacations.com and say, you know, I hear BA talk about these Oasis class ships all the time. You know, I want to sail on a ship like that. You know, you've got a brand new Oasis class ship. It's called Utopia of the Seas. It's going to debut. Its first ever sailings coming up this July. You have a chance to be a part of a maiden voyage, a brand new ship coming to Port Canaveral in July. Icon of the Seas, of course, sailing out of Port of Miami here right now. A lot of fun things happening for Royal Caribbean in 2024, and I think you owe it to yourself to be a part of all of those. So you can check out Jessica Slater. She'll tell you more about that. Even her website, royaldogs.com. Specifically for Dog Nation Cruisers, she's got you right there, royaldogs.com. All right, let's dive in here and do a few stories. Cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. So one of the things John and I talked about, and one of the things I addressed before he joined, is if you had your choice of where you could allocate your NIL dollars, if you could say, what do we want the brand of Georgia football to be? I'd say moving forward, you want it to be the best big men you can find. Dominate the offensive and defensive linemen. So with that in mind, let's talk about a couple of those recruits here for right now. Let me start with David Sanders. This is the five-star offensive lineman out of Charlotte area Providence High School. That's a school that Georgia fans know very well. And, you know, David actually gave us yesterday a little deeper in terms of his list of finalists than sometimes you get. He's down to a top six right now. You got Clemson on there, Matt Luke trying to battle. Obviously, Georgia, Ohio State, which has not won nearly enough of these battles as of late. South Carolina is a factor. So is Tennessee. So is Alabama. Sanders is a name to know. You've read plenty about him there at Dog Nation. And perhaps you disagree, and maybe you'll be proven right on this. But if you gave me my choice, as a Georgia fan, if I could only have one, do I want Julian Lewis or do I want David Sanders? I think I'd want David Sanders. You have every right to disagree with that, and that is not in any way meant to disparage Julian Juju Lewis, who, to be frank, I also hope comes to Georgia. And, you know, perhaps given the current challenge of tougher schedule, you know, longer path to the playoff, everything else, maybe you need them both. But if it's a, you only have one, what do you want your brand to be? I want the brand of Georgia football to be David Sanders. That's a name worth watching. And in addition to that, the other side of the ball, there's also big news related to there as well. This is a little bit more in keeping with what we typically get this time of year. A group of finalists that sort of looks like Joe Lunardi's bracketology. You got, let's see if I can do all these logos. This is Elijah Griffin, by the way, the five-star defensive lineman, who I would say may be the single most important recruit of all out there for Georgia right now, out of Savannah Christian. But you've got Georgia, Colorado, Louisville, Miami, Florida, Clemson, LSU, South Carolina. How about the Gamecocks being a finalist on both these guys? USC, Oregon, Duke is on there, and so is Alabama. So long list, top 12, but the point is for Elijah Griffin, Georgia's on there. Now, we believe as Griffin continues to winnow his list down, we believe Georgia's going to remain. And as I said, I'll say it again, and you know, part of the reason when we do this show is for people to share differences of opinions. Your opinion may be different than mine, but my opinion, I'm going to make it clear. If I can only choose one recruit for Georgia, Julian Juju Lewis, highly touted, highly respected quarterback, or a guy like Elijah Griffin, my choice on that would also be Griffin. I want Georgia to dominate in recruiting with the best offensive and defensive linemen coming out of high school. I believe that if I could wave that magic wand or, you know, spend those magic NIL dollars and make that happen, I believe that is the best way to pave the clearest path towards future national championships, because I got two national championships in the very recent past that prove just how true that is. So these are all stories worth watching. Both Griffin and Sanders put Georgia in their list of finalists, and for Sanders, he's now down to a top six, so that is a pretty big deal. Looks like in college football, speaking of all the change that happens around the sport, we've got more rule changes coming to the sport. And one of the biggest of all is the fact that it seems like college football is now adopting a lot more rules that sort of make it a little bit more like the NFL. Now, one of those is helmet communication. You've heard that talked about, that NFL obviously has the coach-to-player communication in the helmet. Looks like college football is going to adopt that. We don't quite know how many headsets are going to be in helmets. Will it just be quarterback? Will it be other players there as well? I think Kirby Smart has said that, you know, this doesn't necessarily change the Connor Stallion stuff, the signals on the sideline, things like that. Kirby says that the tempo teams are still going to want all that stuff on the sideline anyway, so who knows how much all of that changes. They're also going to have the tablets, the way the NFL teams have their tablets on the sideline. College football is going to have more of that, which is sort of strange. They don't already do that anyway. And then maybe the biggest one, the one that fans will sort of notice the most, is the fact that it looks like college football is getting very close to implementing a two-minute warning. I believe, certainly at the end of the game, and I believe it's also before the end of the half there as well. And listen, I am not, like, dramatically opposed to this just on spec. I mean, I'm not like one of these guys of, oh, it's tradition not to have a two-minute warning, so therefore you can. I'm not like hardcore about that. And I'm also somewhat willing to listen to the argument of, well, if the TV partners are going to spend all this money, they have to have a way of inserting a commercial right there before the crucial moment of the game. Like, I'm a free market person, just to be honest with you. I sort of get the idea that the TV networks want to make as much money as they possibly can. I do get that. But the thing that I think expresses, you know, some concern for me is the same thing that John was talking about before, is the sort of how can we maximize dollar value seems to be the only conversation being had. I'm not like unsympathetic to, hey, you know, TV is running a business, therefore they want to get the most out of that business. But I am a little bit concerned we're making this change solely because that's what TV wants. Or in the case of the proposed college football playoff changes, making those solely because that's what the two most marketable leagues, in this case the SEC and the Big Ten, want. And what you're left to conclude is, or left at least left to be concerned about is that perhaps there's nobody out there that gives any consideration whatsoever to what do fans want. And listen, you can get away with that for a little while because college football has proven to be a very resilient sport. We know that's the case. But eventually, if you don't ever ask what fans might want, then you may look up one day and realize you have fewer fans than you used to. Now, for now, college ball's got all the fans that it needs. But it doesn't mean that's always the case. We do see sports erode in popularity. It does happen. We could cite examples of that. It is certainly not a birthright, a guarantee that college football has to be always as popular as it is now. And the more you listen, I mean, look at ESPN. Just to be frank here for a moment, ESPN is a very large business because it does generate a lot of revenue. But ESPN is also essentially a failed business. You know, the cable bundle has totally collapsed. ESPN's foray and its parent company's foray into streaming is a total abject disaster and a failure. ESPN is a very large, for the most part, failed business. And so in the case of the college football playoff, to only do what ESPN wants you to do, I don't know if that's such a wise decision given the fact that ESPN has proven not to be very good at making decisions when it comes to how it handles its own business. I'd say the same thing is true for like commercial load and things like that. Shorten the game, make it less football, but let's make sure we have more room for commercials. Or stop the game at the two-minute warning because we can jam another commercial in there. Well, that's what ESPN wants, and the conventional wisdom is, well, you've got to do what ESPN wants because they're the one that's paying for everything. But just remember, you have made your overlord a company that's proven incapable of deciding its way to solvency. They're not capable of doing that. This is a business whose future is very much in doubt. And the more college football only does what ESPN wants, I would say that college football, to a certain extent anyway, is also putting its own future in jeopardy somewhat. Now, speaking of other changes that are out there right now, I'm a little less concerned about this. A lot of folks have talked about, on Friday, the NCAA made a statement about the fact that after losing again in court, this time to Tennessee the other day, they're essentially halting all investigations on anything sort of related to NIL activity. And I think, John, we heard him express some concern about that a moment ago. You know, for me, of all the things happening in college athletics, this is the thing that I'm probably the least concerned about related to the overall big picture for a couple of reasons. I really don't have that big of a problem with athletes getting paid. For all of the stuff that's, I think, sort of an issue for sports going forward, the fact that the players are perhaps getting some money, to me, is sort of the least concerning part about all of this. And when it comes to getting money out of high school as an inducement to go play wherever they're going to play, one of the reasons why I'm not so worried about that is because if you try to make a rule against that at the NCAA level or a law against that at, like, say, the state or national level, that's kind of unenforceable, right? Like we can't really go to someone's state of mind of, well, you know, so-and-so is going to give you an NIL deal, but that's not the reason he chose to go to that school. Like, people say that kind of stuff all the time. There's no way of proving that one way or another. We would say human nature is everybody responds to incentives. That's just sort of the basic law of life. And so if there's more incentives to be at school A as opposed to school B, well, of course, someone's going to probably make that choice, whether they sort of articulate it that way or not. So this idea of NIL can exist, but not as an inducement to recruiting, you know, that's asking human nature to be different than what it already is, and that's asking for laws and rules that are, for the most part, I would say, unenforceable. So there are some very real concerns related to college athletics here right now, but of all the change we're seeing, this is one of those things that I don't really care much about this. And when it comes to the real issues that college athletics is facing, I've never seen anything get better because of an NCAA investigation. Would you agree with that? So the NCAA is standing down. I would say, we'll probably never really notice because they're not much of a force for good in our lives anyway. And for now anyway, we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, before we close the show, I'm going to be careful about this because some of y'all have said that I doomed the basketball team. I jinxed the basketball team. I am not a superstitious person. But some of y'all have criticized me for that because there was a time we're putting the Georgia basketball in the air and we're doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, pretty clearly after that, the Georgia basketball team completely fell face first and have sort of finished that way. And just to be totally honest with you, after a loss, again on Saturday, whatever goodwill seemed to have existed at the early portion of the season, I think that's just gone. Like, they got to be better. And, you know, next year, whatever else, I mean, you got to be better than you are here right now. So I don't know if that's the high school kids you're bringing in or the transfers, whatever else, but you just got to be better. Just got to be better at basketball. There's too much excitement and fun happening in the basketball world to have Georgia just be a total non-participant in any of it. Georgia needs to be better. We'll see if they will. But many of you have accused me of kind of jinxing the basketball team by hyping them up early in the season. So what I'm about to do is not in any way hype. It's just sort of pointing out a thing that happened. And sometimes that's what we do around here. Georgia baseball did take a sweep of Georgia Tech here this weekend. And in Sunday, that's dramatic fashion. Georgia was down big to the Yellow Jackets, came back and won 11-9, won Saturday's game there as well. And the real fun here was on Friday, they had a pretty big lead. Somehow, some way, you know, Tech finagled their way into getting the game sort of postponed right before it otherwise would have become official. And by the way, how about that? Nice images from the Cool Ray Field there on Sunday. Great job by our folks, including Cody Chaffins, Jay Black, getting all that together. That's sharp stuff right there. But the point is, it was a sweep of Georgia Tech. It could have been a three-game sweep because the game on Friday, we would say perhaps nefariously, was called before it became official. So that got Georgia fans pretty salty. In fact, our friends at the Classic City Collective, speaking of NIL, which we've mentioned a couple of times, they had a you know, one of those if-you-know-you-know type of tweets here. We'll show this to you on the screen, where they said, hey, that's a three-game sweep if I ever saw one, basically saying that yeah, they tried to, you know, get the Friday game canceled. Georgia came back, win game two, game three. Go ahead and count that that first game there as well. So strong stuff from Georgia. People a little salty about Friday, which I don't think is a bad thing. Probably brings more interest into the series overall and maybe Georgia baseball overall there as well. Dramatic win on Sunday, win on Saturday. Things looking pretty good for the Wes Johnson era here thus far with the Diamond Dogs as SEC play looms. So congratulations to the Diamond Dogs. A little bit of a sweep against Georgia Tech this weekend. And no, that is not in any way any kind of jinx because we're not hyping it up and we're not bandwagoning. We're just pointing out something that happened. So with that, we'll wrap up today's program. Couple of golden shoes to give to you here. Now, we started the show by laughing at Florida, things not being good for the lousy, stinking Gators. That's sort of what this portion of the show is about anyway. So our buddy Georgia on tap, certainly a well-placed golden shoe from him to say, straight up golden shoe to the posterior by this DGD. So you had Ray Davis, the Kentucky running back, who had the huge rushing total against Florida earlier in the football season, was asked at the combine. He says, I thought the defense opted out. I hadn't had a day like that easy since Pop Warner, which is very, very funny. So good stuff. Is that Sosa Stout? Is that how you say that? Big Game James? Georgia on tap giving us that. So golden shoes all the way around. More reasons to laugh at Florida. You love that. Now, Georgia on tap, though, we'll give him another golden shoe because he was critical of me. On Friday's show, I talked about milkshakes having protein. Georgia on tap says it's only 1.1 grams for a milkshake. He says that's not going to get you very far if you want the sort of protein. Who was it we're talking about that needed to gain more weight, whatever else? 1.1 grams of protein. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Now, I'm not a dietitian. You already know that. But if your milkshake only has 1.1 grams of protein, to me, that lets me know you don't have enough ice cream in there. Like your milk to ice cream content's not high enough, or you don't have enough, like whipped cream's got protein in it, doesn't it? I feel like you got to load that thing down with a little bit more ice cream, a little bit more whipped cream. Doesn't that have protein? It's dairy, right? So I feel like there's ways we can kind of get that up a little bit. Or maybe you just sort of shake a little protein powder in there and drink as much as you want to. Maybe that's the answer. Either way, we'll give Georgia on tap a golden shoe for that there as well. Lousy, stinking Gators, they don't have enough protein in their life either. 1,213 days, that's how long it's been since they've beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. And as you heard from the top of the show, that's a number that we expect to keep on going up for a while because it is a tough time down there in Gainesville for now. And that is our Gator Hater Update. We'll see you back here tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella, Window and Door of Georgia.